Hey, Michelle.
Hey.
How are you doing?
I'm good. I'm tired. I almost fell asleep. So it's rainy and cold and drizzly and it's great sleeping weather.
Yeah.
Yeah. What about
you? Hopefully I can wake you up a little bit.
I bet you can.
So you're new to this Louis episode. What do you think of the show?
I thought it was like you said a few days ago when we first started talking about it. I thought it was pretty thought-provoking, and you really can take it to a pretty deep level if you stop and think about some of the things. I'm sure it could just be mindless TV at the same time, if that's what you were in the mood for, just, you know, just for some laughs and stuff. But I can definitely see how a lot of thought went into to some of the stuff. I haven't seen very much of it yet, but from what I've seen, that's what I can tell. What do you think?
Yeah, well, I was kind of thinking when we watch Breaking Bad or Game of Thrones or some of these other shows, like, you don't really put yourself in the episode of Game of Thrones, you know? And you might try to do it with Breaking Bad a little bit, but it's still pretty much a stretch. But Louis, I totally put myself in almost everything he's doing. He's just a really good representative of, like, the male psyche, and probably some of the females he encounters would be like some of the female things I would think you might think about.
Yeah, I think it's probably exaggerated, maybe, I hope, right, a little bit. But I can see it being like an exaggerated, almost a caricature form of the psyche, no?
I don't think it's overly exaggerated. I think a lot of what he writes about is pretty spot on to what he's, like, lived and his real experiences.
But surely, some of them are, you know, some of the interactions and stuff, I can't imagine that they, or I do hate to think that they would have acted out as strongly as he shows them.
Yeah, I think you might be surprised as we go through some of these episodes, and we'll try to do some of these episodes just kind of see how it goes, but how real some of them, you know, he's just like writing about what really happened to him.
It's funny. I actually was listening to it by myself and had headphones in, watching it at first on my phone just after you and I talked about it. And it's pretty rare that I'll watch something by myself with headphones and actually sit and snicker at it. So I thought that was pretty, I mean, it was pretty funny. Some of the stuff you couldn't keep from laughing at because it was so over the top or absurd or so, I guess, like you said, hits kind of close to home. So
you're wearing headphones to protect your 16-year-old from hearing them.
She actually wasn't even around, but yeah, this probably isn't something I would watch with a 16-year-old.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's kind of funny. I Googled Louis Pilot to get the episode one details, and just in case you might want to know, Louis Pilot was a Luxembourgian soccer player born in 1940.
Is that his name on here?
No, that's just a guy named Louis Pilot, Louis P-I-L-O-T.
Oh, really? That's pretty funny.
Louis C.K. is the name of the comedian, obviously, in the show. And
right.
He uses C.K. because his name is like a Hungarian name with a bunch of vowels together, but it's pronounced C.K., so he just goes with the two initials.
I didn't realize that either. I didn't realize. Of course, I've, you know, seen him before and heard some of his stuff, but I didn't realize that that's why he went by C.K. That's interesting.
But Louis Pilot was one of the best soccer players in Luxembourg over the last 50 years. I just thought I'd throw that odd fact in there.
I wonder if Louis C.K. knew that.
Probably not.
Yeah, probably.
But Louis C.K., the real comedian guy we're talking about, used to be a writer, and he probably still is a writer. I don't know how much he might ghost write for some of these other comedians, but one of the big people he wrote for was Chris Rock and some other pretty famous comedians. And he got his start helping those guys, you know, with jokes on their shows.
I wonder how long he's been doing it.
Well, he said he started writing. Well, he did stand up starting at age 17.
Oh, wow. So a pretty good while.
Yeah. So he's like 40, mid 40s now. So he's, yeah, he's been around a while.
That's pretty funny.
So he was born in Mexico. He's like a Mexican, Hungarian, Irish American comedian. And he's got a lot of. He's got a lot of crazy life experiences. He moved, obviously, to New York, where all these shows are set. So, do you want to try to go through the episode and describe the scenes in the first, in the pilot?
The first episode doesn't even have a title. They just call it pilot. And I thought it was kind of interesting, the song that they play when he's coming on. I mean, of course, it's a really popular song, the Brother Louie song.
Yeah.
And it's by a band or a group called Stories. Did you know that? Because I kind of looked that up, and it was topped the chart in 1973, and it's a really controversial song at the time because it's about a white man falling in love with a black woman. And that's what the song is about, and it was pretty controversial. And I don't think that's really the reason that they use it for this show, obviously. I think it's just the name. But it's funny that it is so controversial, and then all of his situations seem pretty controversial,
yeah,
too.
Well, it's pretty interesting, because if we do some more of these episodes, you'll see later on that, and it's confusing to me, I might have to watch more closely, but Louis has an ex that's a black woman who's kind of represented as the mother of the two kids. And the two kids are like these pasty white Eastern European-looking girls, like they're white, blonde little girls.
Yeah, they look white, and he's redheaded.
Yeah, so I still have to figure out how that connection got made.
that's odd.
But he opens every episode the same way. He comes up out of the subway and goes to the pizza place, and usually goes to the comedy club to start with an opening dialogue.
And did you get how? I mean, he's alone. And I wonder if that has anything to do. He comes up out of the subway. He's by himself. There's not even anybody around him. And then when it'll show him walking, and he's walking alone, and he's looking around at other people, and he takes the trouble to show him looking, particularly like at groups of people and stuff like that, and he's alone. And then it shows him, I mean, you know, we all think about having a meal and eating with friends and stuff, and it shows him eating the pizza, and he's alone. He's not even bothering sitting down or having a drink. He's just like shoveling it in, and then he walks out the door with a big mouth full of food. And
yeah, you're not going to see too many family get together sit down meals. This is kind of a guy on his journey, kind of a loner guy's story.
But I wonder if they're making him look lonely and pitiful and sad.
He's not making it look anything. That's one of the things that's really authentic about the show, is he's really doing it. So he comes up out of the 4th Street subway, which is really next to where that Caroline's, or where the Comedy Cellar is, not Caroline's, but the Comedy Cellar. And that Ben's Pizzeria is right there in the city next to the Comedy Cellar. And you can know for a fact that he does do that. He probably comes up out of that subway and grabs a slice of pizza sometimes before he goes in and does his set.
And that's really accurate to the layout of New York.
Yep.
I didn't know that.
Yep.
I wouldn't have known. Well, then, okay, so I guess we'll just get into it, if that's okay. And, like, in scene one, I thought it was kind of interesting. I'll back up just a little bit, that they go back and forth. It's kind of Seinfeld-esque. Remember how Seinfeld kind of broke the ground with that, where he did like the stand-up comedy, and then they'd do the show, and then kind of break back into the stand-up comedy again or whatever. And I thought that was interesting, because I haven't seen that, I don't think, in very many other shows. But okay,
right.
So he's doing scene one. In scene one, he's doing his stand-up. And he mentions he's 41, he mentions he's alone, he mentions he has two children, and how he's comfortable with his children and all that kind of stuff. And then it cuts into the scene where he is serving his daughter's French toast, and one of them doesn't like French toast and makes some comment about it. And he's like, you know, he's real fatherly about it, like, sorry, it's what we're having. And then it cuts back into the comedy, but I thought it was funny that he was talking about how comfortable he is with being a parent, and he kind of sets the stage with his age and that he's alone, but he's trying to raise his children, and then the situation with him was so mundane that they showed, just so, I don't know, typical of just any moment. It was just like a little slice of whatever might be going on at any point.
You mean the breakfast when they're having breakfast with the daughters?
Yeah, when he's sitting there, it kind of cuts out, and he's having breakfast with his two little girls. It's the first time we've seen them, and he's serving them French toast, and I think the younger of the two says, I don't like French toast, and he's like, well, sorry, that's what we're having.
Right.
You know, Mommy doesn't serve me French toast, and it's just this, it's just perfect.
Right.
So.
Right, because you think Mommy might make her something else that she might like more, but Louie's kind of giving her the gruff male side of it, like, well, that's what we're having and you can eat it or not.
I think it's just the mother father differences in kids or in parenting, maybe with the kids, because that's I think that's just how it is. And he's talking, it was just funny because he had just mentioned how he was so comfortable with parenting, and then you kind of like get this little awkward kids going, but Mommy doesn't do this, and kind of doing the comparison already with him. It seems like everything in it's sort of set up to make him feel like a failure, or
right,
all the interactions he has makes him feel low or
right,
less than. And I thought it was just funny that it started with his daughter, who he adores, and that's the first thing she kind of says is, I don't like
yeah,
this.
Yeah, he's always examining his self-esteem, and the show is really rich with awkward. You'll see as you go through it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I took a couple of notes, and I wrote down the word awkward so many times that I had to find a different word to use because, yeah. So, anyway, they go back to the stand-up comedy. He talks about volunteering at his child's school and why he's volunteering because there's no adults. And then he goes into that lunchroom milk carton dilemma. Do you remember that?
Yeah, but he also says that he helps the Jamaican woman because one Jamaican woman versus 300 kids is not a fair fight.
I know, when he says she handles it as only she could or something to that effect. It was pretty good.
And so he jumps in to volunteer and help her.
And
yeah, but the milk carton yeah, analogy is pretty funny.
That was one of the first things that really got me. I thought that was really funny because he was talking about the nuances and how it's at this point 2009 and they can't put it in a bottle, and you have to have the nuance of being able to push back this little envelope and make a little spout with it. And I thought that was pretty good.
Right, but he also says, like, so the kids don't get the nuance. They have to poke, so they dig in there with their dirty fingers. And then he goes, like, so they get it all, like, dirty and contaminated. And he goes, well, I don't get the nuance either, so I stick my dirty finger in there and get it open. It's funny.
Yeah.
He's like he's like a big baby in the world.
Yeah, but he said he's able to handle the stress of it better or
right,
something to that effect. I thought that was so funny. But I think maybe the bigger comment on this is that how things in life, I mean, what I took out of it in my female way anyway, is that things in life are harder than they have to be a lot of times. Even something as simple as opening your milk. And I don't know, did you get anything like that out of it?
Yeah, that's pretty accurate. I mean, maybe there's sometimes things in life are as hard as we make them. Like, you could get really frustrated, like the cafeteria woman, like, you get really frustrated, but it's better just to jump in and get the job done, even if you've broken your own dirty finger in there to do it.
Yeah, what was he saying? Even Gandhi would have hollered at him to shut up or something.
Oh, did he? Yeah.
All these kids, something like that. I think that was the point that he did that. So, you can imagine. I mean, it's hard to handle a few kids, and that many kids, that's pretty significant. Okay, so scene two, then, they're getting on the bus for the field trip with his daughter, and they're going to the Bronx Botanical Gardens. And there's an apathetic bus driver.
Right.
So, what did you get out of that?
That bus driver, he's actually a comedian, or a writer and an actor slash comedian. and he's been in some shows and stuff, but he's probably a good buddy of Louis. William Stevenson is the bus driver, and he's the lamest ass bus driver ever. Like, I don't know, how do we get, like, the first thing is like, well, okay, where are we going and how do we get there? And Louis like, well, you're the goddamn bus driver. Why am I having to tell you how to get there? And of course, Louis has to call and get the directions and all that. But this guy is like a real slump. Like, he has no idea what to do or where to go or anything.
Well, yeah. And you give him like 1 minute, one second of free time, and he picks up his newspaper and starts reading it. That's like his default. And it kind of reminded me of Stanley on The Office. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, he actually looked like him, too.
He kind of does. He kind of resembles him. But it was just funny because Stanley would always pick up his crossword puzzles anytime there was any break in anything. It was like his escape. And so this bus driver picked up his newspaper, and just anytime there was a literal 2 second pause in any conversation. So
right.
But yeah, then he gets on the road and he's going the wrong way at the urging of Louis, because Louis tells him just take whatever road that was.
Yeah, he doesn't go the wrong way. He tells him to take the wrong road, though. He tells him to take the West Side Highway, which doesn't allow trucks or buses. So so what they're doing is they're, I don't know exactly where they start, but Louis's haunts are like in the midtown south part of Manhattan, like 16th Street. So it's kind of southern middle part of Manhattan. And they're going up to the Bronx Botanical Gardens for their field trip. And that's way up north. So they're going through some really, really rough parts of town. As you describe more about the scene, we'll see what happens. But they go way up north, like up near where Yankee Stadium is in the Bronx. So you got Manhattan in the, you know, kind of the island part. And above Manhattan is Harlem. And then above Harlem is the Bronx. And so they're going pretty far, and Louis gives him kind of a misdirection by telling him to go up the West Side Highway.
Because how would Louis know that you can't drive a school bus? I mean, there would be no reason for him to know that.
Yeah, you would think a bus driver would say, well, I can't take this on that highway because I'm an expert driver, and you know, but obviously that doesn't happen.
Right, the bus driver, he's like, whatever, and just kind of follows the directions. But I think that's another thing about this, because it's you do have people in life that if you don't tell them exactly, you know, what to do, they're just kind of apathetic about what they're doing, and the whole thing is just like, okay, well, I'll do what I'm told and what I need to do, and not much more. And Louis is getting more and more frustrated, and you can tell he just can't understand how this bus driver can't know where he's going, and so he's on the phone with a lady from the Bronx Botanical Gardens, and she's like, well, you can't have the bus on there. And he asked the bus driver if he knew that, and the bus driver's going, yeah, you told me to go. And so he's just flabbergasted at this. And then he finds out, I suppose, why you can't, one of the reasons anyway, you can't have the bus on there is because he goes under an overpass that ends up scraping the top of the bus and causes a flat tire.
Right.
So that was bad.
Yeah, so then the guy pulls out his paper again and starts reading the paper again. Like, well, I don't know what to do. I think the whole funny part of all this is, like, Louis thrust into, like, the leadership position. You know, he's just along to help the teacher get the kids there and watch his daughters and stuff. But he's kind of thrust into the leadership by default because of this sorry-ass bus driver.
But I think what's kind of funny about that, and I completely agree, but with the female teacher, he seemed pretty comfortable or more comfortable in that role. But with the male, he expected him, it seemed like to me, more. Like with the teacher, he's hustling the kids on the bus and everything, and she comes up and she claps her hands and pats the side of the bus and, come on kids, settle down, whatever. But he gets on last. He allows her to get on first and all this kind of stuff and kind of stands there. And he assumes the more traditional, I suppose, male role. But then with the guy, it's like he's looking for this guy, and he might look the same way were it a female bus driver. I don't know. But it's not. It's a male bus driver. And he looks at him to kind of step up. And
I don't think so. I don't think the male-female bus driver has anything to do with it. I think it's just the role of a bus driver. Like, you're a bus driver. First of all, you should know where you're going to go. When you pick up a busload of kids, you should know how to get wherever you're supposed to go. And then if I suggest a route, I guess you're supposed to know the bus rules. Like, West Side Highway doesn't allow trucks and buses, so we can't go that way. So I don't know if it matters so much about this gender of the bus driver so much as just he's such a slacker.
Yeah, you might be right about that. I'm not sure. I just noticed that he seemed to, I don't know, his interaction with men and women, and I've only seen a little bit so far, but it seems to me to have subtle differences. But you might prove me wrong on that. You've certainly seen a lot more than I have about it. But anyway, they have a flat, and so they're stranded. They're stranded in Harlem, and the bus driver, first, Louis gets really upset, and he really kind of chews the bus driver out, and then the bus driver sits there, and he starts reading his paper, and then he's kind of had enough of it, and he just picks up his stuff and gets off the bus and says, "I live three blocks from here. I'm going home." And Louis's flabbergasted that he's handling it like that.
Right. So the bus driver lives in Harlem. He realizes he's, like, pretty close to home. That's it for his day. He's out of there.
Right. And, of course, the kids, you know, they're like, a flat tire. Yay, fun.
Right.
And so Louis ends up solving the whole situation by calling individual limos to pick the children up.
Right, but before that, Louis puts all the black kids at the windows. He moves all the seating around so all the darker skinned kids are sitting at the windows because they're stuck in Harlem.
Right. Well, he tries to, and the teacher's like, "What are you doing?"
Right.
And he said, "Well, I'm trying to." I don't remember what. What did he say about that? That they're stuck in Harlem and he feels like that's the safest thing. And she wants to get out and walk and find a subway station or something. And he's uncomfortable with that. And
yeah, well, Louis's solution is pretty reasonable, even if it's kind of racist. And her solution is pretty horrible, like to walk a team of kids through Harlem, you know, with two white people. It's not the greatest solution. And then, like you said, he calls the limos and kind of bails them all out of it. But Louis has a better, I think, a pretty much a better strategic answer than the teacher did.
He has such a, well, I don't know that specific area and I'm not real familiar with that. And I know that there are bad areas. You and I have had this conversation ad nauseum and I wouldn't walk through bad areas particularly, but he has such a guy answer. It is such a guy thing. I mean, he calls limos. That is such a guy thing to do. I don't think that teacher in 1,000 years would have ever even thought to call limos.
Right.
And I thought that was pretty great. What kind of life significance, though, do you think that whole scene has in it?
Well, I think Louis, in a way, he takes the easy way because he just uses money to get out of the problem. But, he tries to make it a lesson, even if it's a fairly weak lesson, like, okay, kids, this is the new field trip is we all get to go in our own limo on our way home. You know, of course, the kids love it, and the teacher says something like, "What are you teaching these kids by doing this?" But I think it's more practical than walking those kids through a really bad part of town with the crime rate and all that that they might have had to, you know, encounter on their way past all the people in Harlem.
But there was nothing, there was no choice other than walking through Harlem or calling individual limos for all the kids.
Well, what would you have done?
I would have probably asked for a replacement bus, maybe, or something. I don't know. Tried to call the school and get another bus to come out. I'm not sure. But I mean, you know, just thinking on the spot or something to that effect. In 100 years, I wouldn't have thought call individual limousines to carry these children home.
One of the other impressions I got from this being the pilot is that they were, you know, it's obviously the pilot, so they're trying to make a big splash with it and get it sold to the network, whoever they were trying to sell it to. So it seemed like they were trying to cram a whole lot of stuff into it. So it has two little different vignettes, and then at the end it has a third little scene, and it has a lot of jokes, and it seems like it's really trying to jam a lot of information and comedy into, you know, one 30-minute segment.
Yeah, I think having, again, not seen a whole lot, I do think it had a lot of different things, and if you didn't stop to really sort of analyze it, I think a lot of it would have went... I know it did me the first time I watched it. I enjoyed it, but a lot of it went over, you know, went kind of past me because there is a lot to it.
So do you think the next scene is connected to the first scene?
Well, are you talking about when he's back in the comedy club talking?
Yeah.
Yeah, because it's, well, I didn't connect it so much, but based on what you just said, I do. So, scene three. Okay, he's back in the comedy club. He's talking about driving an Infiniti while there's people starving to death, and he's talking about the evilness of that.
Right. Yeah, he says his life, the premise of life as an evil white guy. He's an evil white guy. And he was kind of an evil white guy with his solution in Harlem there, taking the kids on limo rides home instead of, like, bravely walking them through the pretty much black neighborhood.
Well, yeah, and it's like you were talking about using money to get out of the situation. The same kind of thing.
Right. So what was the joke about his car?
Something about he could sell his car and get a Ford Focus with low miles or something and have $20,000 and get $20,000 back and save all these people from starving, and every day he doesn't do that.
So I'm killing people by driving my car.
Yeah, that's what he was saying. Every day he's doing that. So I thought that was interesting. An interesting take on things, but, I mean, think about it.
You trying to tell me to sell my Acura?
No, I wouldn't begin to ask you to sell your, but a lot of the more radical Christian books and stuff talk about that kind of thing too, and I thought that made it interesting.
Yeah, like give away everything you have except for what you need to live.
Yeah.
But this is a comedy show, so we're going to stay on the comedy side of it.
Well, he doesn't stay on the, I mean, how, there are so many levels that he is, it is, I mean, things he says is so, it's horrific. It's not funny.
But dark equals funny.
I guess. Okay. So he's still in the comedy club. He talks about being single. He mentions he's 41 again. He says he was married for 10 years. And then he goes into his little diatribe about how dating's horrible. In any situation, it's going to end up horrible. You're either going to not like somebody, or you're going to like somebody and then they're not going to like you, or you're going to like somebody and then they're going to be with your best friend, or you're going to be with their best friend later on down the road. Or best case scenario is you love somebody and you marry somebody and you're with them your whole life and then they die. That's the best you can hope for.
Yeah. Yeah, even if it's nice, it will lead to shit.
That's...
You're going to end up splitting your friends and your money. And every relationship ends in death or dumping. It's pretty true, though, if you think about it. Like, it's really dark, but it's pretty true.
Well, that's dark. That's dark, and I won't go into it yet because it's later, but it's along the same lines of the getting a puppy thing. Then he kind of comes around and ties it back in later on. What's his solution? What's the alternative to having this? It's almost like he's saying, don't do anything that's nice and feels good because you're going to die in the end anyway.
Yeah, he's not trying to offer solutions. He's just trying to lay it all open, like, this is exactly how it looks to me. You know, he's not there to provide answers. He's there to, like, throw out funny questions, I think.
But don't you think that's indicative of where he's at in his life? Assuming this is true, I don't know.
It's all true, absolutely. You're seeing what this guy's thinking.
Okay, so he's really been married for 10 years. He's really divorced in real life, and he's really got these two young children.
I don't know about the numbers, but yeah, I think he's really divorced. He really has two daughters, and he really lives in New York, and he's really a comedian. It's pretty transparent.
So don't you think that that's indicative of where he is at this point?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, because at another point, he wouldn't be so negative, maybe. Although, I don't know, because it's funny. But I think he's certainly looking at the worst, don't you?
I think he's being very honest, and he's like reflecting the honest feelings he really has in a comedic way. But I don't think he's making things up or embellishing. I think he's pretty honest.
So, you think he's being... I think he's even laughing at himself, though, because when he says that about the best case scenario is that you love somebody and she dies and leaves you alone.
Yeah, he's laughing at himself so he doesn't cry for himself.
Okay. I don't know that.
Well, is he wrong? Is he wrong? You've got the nice family life with the husband and kids and a nice home and all that. I mean, is he really wrong? Somehow that's going to come to an end somehow with it doesn't last forever, you know, and he's got like a compressed time frame where he's got divorce and all that. But it's pretty much true. You know, you're going to find an ending to some sort of harmonic relationship either way, you know.
Well, everything ends, but the purpose is kind of the journey, right?
But and well, let's go on okay. To the second half.
Okay, so in scene four, this is when he's in the hallway and he's knocking at the door of his date. I assume she's a blind date, right?
It seems so, yeah.
Yeah. And, this was the one that I was genuinely laughing at, okay? It was so funny. It was so awkward. And he played that so perfectly. It was almost like he had lived this or something. So, he's left waiting in the hallway. He's knocking and she's not ready yet. So, he's left waiting in the hallway. They can't hear one another and he's having to repeat himself and they're hollering back and forth and all that. And so a door opens and there's a naked older woman with her head stuck out the door telling him that she feels vulnerable because he is being so loud and she's naked and she feels vulnerable and she is very naked. Does he understand what that means?
Right.
And he just got the look on his face.
Well, yeah, it's funny because... First of all, I think that probably really happened to him in some variation, maybe not exactly the same way, but I bet that's happened to him. I really do. I bet that's happened to him. That woman is an actress named Kathleen Butler. She's been in a couple movies that people might have seen, A League of Their Own and Where in the World is Carmen Sandiego?
Mm-hmm.
But the ironic thing is she says, "Your yelling makes me feel very vulnerable," yet she's naked.
Like, well, she says it makes her feel vulnerable because she's naked, is what I heard.
No, she says, "Your yelling makes me feel very vulnerable." And then she like pauses and then she says, "And I'm naked." Okay. Like to emphasize, you should notice that I'm naked.
Oh, she said it more than once.
I know.
Right? Yeah, she wanted him to know. And I mean, she's standing there and you can see her shoulders. She's either naked or in a towel. And you can tell she doesn't have any clothes on. And she's just standing there and she's looking at him. And it's this long, drawn-out pause. And it's an uncomfortable pause. And he's looking everywhere but at her. And she's just, like, drilling her eyes into him.
So why do you think she did that? She was saying pretty much, "Look at me, you know."
Oh, yeah.
She opened the door. She didn't even have to open the door. That's why it's so dumb to say, I'm feeling vulnerable because you're being loud. She didn't have to open the door, and she wouldn't have been vulnerable at all.
Or she could have grabbed a robe, couldn't she?
So why do you think she did that?
I have no... Well, because she wanted to be noticed, I'm sure, I would guess. But, I mean, I don't have those life experiences living in Tennessee.
So what happens next?
Okay, so he says to her, go ahead and show me. Well, he continues to knock on the door, and his blind date's getting more agitated because he's rushing her, and the older woman's still staying in the door, and he turns around and he kind of gives in. He looks at her and kind of has this resignation on his face, and he says, all right, you're going to show me. Go ahead and show me. And she's indignant. She can't believe he would say something like that to her.
Right.
And he's standing there looking like, yeah, okay. And so she opens the door, and he gives her a slow man, so typical man, once over, the down, real slow back up, and then he's looking in her eyes. And then she starts calling him a pig. In every imaginable way you could say the word pig, that's how she's saying it to him.
Yeah.
Low, high, drawn out, fast. She continues to call him a pig.
Yeah, so Louis's demeanor kind of changes from like the embarrassed, like, oh, I'm uncomfortable and don't know what to do, to like this exasperated resignation, like, all right, you want to show me, just go ahead and show me. And you can see the change on his face when she opens the door. He's like, he doesn't really want to see it, but she wants to show it, so he's like resigned to like watching it.
What a crazy life event.
So what do you think that scene meant? Why do you think he did that?
Well, I don't know if it was just to lead up to the awkwardness of the whole thing, like the beginning of meeting this woman, and how it couldn't have hardly started in a more awkward way, or if there was something else to it. What do you think?
Well, yeah, he has a couple door problems later on in the episode, so... So he meets the girl. The blind date he has is Chelsea Peretti. And Chelsea is on a show called True TV, which is also the show Brian Callen's on.
Oh, okay.
So she's a comedian. And I actually have talked to Chelsea Peretti before. Not really talked to her, but through Twitter. I sent her a text message. I'll talk more about it later on when you go through the episode. But she's pretty famous as a comedian. She has a brother named Jonah Peretti, who runs a pretty big company called BuzzFeed.
BuzzFeed, oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
BuzzFeed puts news out, news headlines and news articles out over Twitter. And it's actually a really good company. BuzzFeed's one of my best news sources for just updates on news and stuff. So he meets Chelsea. The girl in mystery, the blind date, is Chelsea Peretti, and he meets her at the door.
Right, and so she comes out, and she's kind of exasperated at this point, and because he's been beaten on the door, and then she notices that he's overdressed because he came from his father's funeral's reunion.
Right.
And he just kind of throws that in, and she feels underdressed. So it's another way that all this is very awkward. And then they're awkwardly trying to get out the door, and he traps her behind the door, and then he's trying to let her go out, and she's caught, and he's trying to be gentlemanly and hold the door open, and it's just not working out for him. And for some reason, he picks that moment to try to give her a kiss.
Right.
And I think that was the end of it. They should have just called it quits right then, and she should have went back upstairs, and he should have went home.
Right. Yeah. So he's trying to be a gentleman and open the door for her. But in doing so, he traps her behind the door. And then because it's such a small little foyer that the door doesn't allow for two people to get through there. So it's really funny. It's awkward. He like traps her, and she's like, OK, I'm sitting here waiting for you to to let me back in. Like, would it be better if you just like open the door and walk through it?
Well, yeah, or even allowed her to walk first if he just had to do that, and her grab the door, and then he grabs it maybe above her head or so. Anything other than what he did, because that was the end of it for
her. Yeah, he's just trying to be super nice to her and super, super overly sweet, and it's making him look like a big, big-ass dork.
It really does. It's just so far over the top of hard to recover. But you feel yourself pulling for the guy. You know, I want him to recover from this. And I know in my girl's heart there's no recovering from this, because he tries to kiss her and she like puts her hand up at his, she doesn't just cringe away, she puts her hand up at his mouth. All I mean, right. Like, this ain't gonna happen. And you pull for him. He's this underdog and you're pulling for him, and it's over at that
right.
point.
And she literally almost says, like, all right, okay, like, back off.
Yeah. Like, yeah, she does. And so finally this is when she starts getting snippy. And so she's snippy with him and they walk out the door. And that's the end of that scene. So in the next scene, they're sitting on the bus and she is doing that very subtle kind of rocking back and forth that people do when they're really, really distressed and like a child that's, you know, sitting in a corner, maybe rocking back and forth. She's not happy with whatever. So he starts doing the grin thing at her. And every time she glances at him, he looks at her and gives her this big toothy grin. And she'll quickly look away and he looks back and he does the big toothy grin, the exact same grin. He does it again and again until she asks him to stop. And I mean, she's not very nice about it. She's like, could you stop? And he goes, no.
Yeah. So he's really trying to impress her. And he like has this goal to take her to this really big shot restaurant. But have you ever had that experience where I guess she finally says something like, you know what? She's pretty honest. Like, she's more honest with him than he is with her, because she just says, look, I'm just hungry. I'm a nice person, but I'm just hungry. Can we get something to eat and I'll feel a lot better?
She does say that, and she obviously feels better once she's eaten, but it's more than that. He has annoyed her, and there comes a point, I think, that you hit that annoyance level, and it's best just to, you know, just to not try to continue that. So I don't think it's all about food. I think that's her way of kind of excusing her, at that point, really harsh behavior.
That's funny, because I've had girlfriends that have said that literally, like, I just need to eat. Like, I know I'm being a bitch, or I know I'm being grumpy, but I just need to eat. My energy's really low.
Like, yeah, absolutely. And people can have blood sugar that drops and everything, and they get really, really weird and grouchy and even mean. But she goes into the little diatribe about, I'm a warm person and I'm gentle, or whatever she says. And then she goes, but I just really need to eat.
Yeah.
And so she's kind of like singing her accolades to him, and she's trying to excuse her poor behavior. But I think she knows, or her harsh behavior. And I think she knows that that's not the problem.
Yeah, I see that differently. I see her just being honest. Like, I'm really hungry. Let's go get something to eat.
Well, why would she ask him, like, to stop smiling? What would you do if a girl asked you to stop smiling? Because
it was, like, uncomfortable. Because I would say that, like, you're, you know, it's not comfortable. Like,
yeah,
I don't know you well enough yet. You know, we don't have enough to be, like, we're not on that level of communication yet where you can just smile at me and I know what that means. I don't know. At this point in the scene, I see her as being honest. Like, she's trying to be honest. And
I think she's just angry.
She's
angry
braver.
At the way the date started. She's angry at him. She's angry at the way he held the door. She's angry that he tried to kiss her. She's angry that she's hungry. She didn't say anything about particularly wanting to go out and get anything to eat. And she's just angry. And maybe she's angry because she's hungry.
But yeah, she has different expectations than him. I mean, he's trying to be sweet. She is being kind of bitchy.
Well, I mean, he might be hungry too, but of course different people handle things differently. And but I think it's as much an excuse maybe for her behavior, although it may be an accurate excuse for her being snippy or whatever. But I don't know. How would you handle it though if a girl asked you to quit smiling? You said, "Well, I would
start digging. I would start finding out what's really going on." Louis just paves it over, like, you know, I like you, and You know, he's just trying to impress her. It's the first date.
Yeah, he is. So he mentions the village, but he says it real indecisively. And I think for the most part, girls really don't like it when guys are indecisive, particularly when they're the ones planning the dates, like plan something.
Right. Well, she doesn't help him much by saying, I hate the village.
Well, right. She says, and she goes, oh, okay, and or whatever. And then he says, well, we don't have to go if you don't want to. And then she's like, I hate the village. But then she's mad at him because he made her say that, and she tells him that. She's like, and now I feel like you made me say that.
Right.
And she's really even upset about that. But anyway, she says she's starving, and that's why she's so bitter. And so he goes, okay. And so he kind of, you know, goes, okay, I've got an answer for this. And they get off the bus right there because he knows a great restaurant that's close.
Right.
So that's the end of that scene.
But the line is like out the door.
Right. So it goes into scene six, and Louie's coming out of a very full restaurant, line out the door, and she is looking. She's not even looking at him at this point. She's looking disgustedly in the other direction. And he's like, well, it's good food. And she's like, yeah, I'm sure. And so she gets an idea, and she grabs him by the arm, and she's taking him somewhere else.
Right. She takes charge. She's like, come on, let's just go. I have a better solution. And they end up going somewhere else.
But he was okay with that. He seemed like,
oh, yeah. He wanted, he's the role, the personality of Louis is like, he wants her to be happy. So if she's happy by taking charge, he wants to let her just run with it.
Is that how he is routinely through these?
That's how guys are. That's how he's like, well, if you know someplace to go and you're happy going there, I'm happy going with you. Like, he doesn't need to be in charge. He's just trying to impress her. He doesn't care if they go to that restaurant. You know, he just thought that would impress her. Just like the suit. She's like, why are you wearing a suit? She was wearing like, totally trashy casual clothes. And he was dressed in his suit.
Because of his father's funeral reunion?
Yeah, but, you know, he's trying to impress her.
So it's not true then, the father's funeral?
Probably, but he could have gone home and changed. He's trying to impress her. He thought that being dressed super nice, taking her to a super nice restaurant in the village, which would have been kind of hip to some people, it's just like failing. Like, it's not registering with her as a positive thing. So anyway, she's hungry. All she cares about is like eating. So she just takes charge and goes, hey, come on.
Okay. And he didn't seem to mind. So anyway, they cut to the next scene, and she's happy. She's eating. They're just getting a sliced pizza. But she's like, oh, okay, good, good, and all this. And so she starts asking him about his children. And everything that he says, she's like, aw, everything. You know, I have two daughters. Aw. She does this little, aw.
Like, aw.
Right. Yeah. And so she asks him about him, and he starts talking about some inappropriate medical stuff with his young daughter and makes it totally, really even awkward for me to watch. It was so awkward. And she's kind of like,
sounds like it's awkward for you to talk about on a podcast, too.
Yeah, Louis says, even like talk.
My daughter has an infected vagina. She's
how
like,
do you talk about that with about a 4-year-old talking about that with somebody?
She's like, oh, an infected vagina.
She is completely put off by that conversation. Right?
Oh, no, she loves it.
No, she does not love it. She looks at him and asks him to start over. She's like, okay, let's start this over. And she asks him about his kids again because she wants to give him a chance to some, because he says this so awkwardly anyway. It's just, wow. Why would you tell somebody something?
Right.
Like
that? But don't you see the paradox here? And the paradox is like, women want guys to be honest, but women want also to hear things that are easy to hear.
Okay. If he's not allowed to smile at her at this point, he is certainly not allowed to be having this conversation. If he can't even give her a kiss or grin at her, we are really overstepping the bounds.
But honesty solved it for her. She's like, look, let's just go. All I really need is a piece of pizza. I don't need a big, impressive restaurant. And that solved it for him. Like, that was like a good solution. I admit he's being like graphically overly honest about his daughter having an infected vagina. Like he could have just said like she's at the doctor and everything's fine, but you know, we had to go get a checkup or something.
Why would you even say that?
Because it's making a point that like honesty like submarines his whole plot, you know, like he can't win for losing, or you know.
You can't think on any level that a man would think that is appropriate first date conversation.
He doesn't think it's appropriate. He's struggling. He doesn't know when to be a player and when to be totally honest. So he's like overly a player with his big suit and his fancy restaurant, and he's overly honest by like all these graphic details that don't have to really be shared, you know, in this first date conversation.
No, please don't share those kind of things.
So it's like a, you know, it's like an examination of where is the middle ground?
Well, I don't know. He seems confused that she thinks it's sweet with her awe that he has
children. He's totally
children.
Confused. He's totally lost.
Right. So, the whole thing is so incredibly just, he's in one place and she's in another place, and it's almost like they're speaking a different language, because that's what women do over kids. They, that's just such a common thing. If I go out with a girlfriend and I say, oh, I've got three daughters, aw, you know, I mean, that's so common. But is this supposed to be like his first date since his divorce? Or is he just not used to being around females? Or is this just, I don't know.
Yeah, he's not the most suave guy on dates.
I think that's probably being portrayed pretty accurately in this. Anyway, she asked him to start over and tell her about his kids. And so then he starts to cry. He's like, you know, they're just my life. And he starts to cry. And she's just incredulous that he's crying. She's totally put off by it. And she's like, are you crying? Are you kidding me?
Right. So again, the tools Louis is using here are the contradictions between, like, total honesty, which sometimes in relationships people crave, and just like appropriateness, which in other times of relationships people crave. Like, this is, let's just smooth this over and like let's just like be okay for in the moment. And in other times, like, it seems like total honesty is like, if you don't give me total honesty, we don't really have a true relationship. So I think he's like using these extremes to emphasize the both of those points.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I can see that. I think that the total honesty thing, though, he's really, really reaching for, because we're talking about some serious honesty here, right? I mean, some pretty in-depth, forthcoming.
Yeah. So then they have another door problem.
Oh, I know. So anyway, she's like put off by his crying, and she says she's going to the bathroom, and he says, well, I have to go too. So then it goes to the next scene.
Which is like crazy. Like, when a girl, you're on a date with a girl and she says, I have to go to the bathroom. The guy doesn't say, yeah, me too, and jump up and follow her. That's like a girl thing. That's like girls going to the bathroom together. So for Louis to like follow her right to the door and wait for her is totally uncomfortable.
Especially considering that they're in a place that has, like, one bathroom.
Right, the unisex
bathroom. It's not even
bathroom.
Like, right, he can go to the guy's bathroom while she's in there. So it's just, like, one little bathroom in this place.
Right.
So the next scene shows that they're at the bathroom, and he starts trying to open the bathroom door for her. And she just gives him this look like, you have lost your mind.
We've been through this before, yeah.
Yeah, and I'm not sure that I would be real comfortable with a guy holding the door open to the bathroom. Right?
Yep.
I mean, that's not maybe, you know, the door. So anyway, he's standing outside and she's in the bathroom and some guy comes up and he starts beating on the door saying he's got to go. And he's like, you know, really, you know, knocking on the door and pounding on the door. And evidently the guy sounds a lot like Louie, which he did upon after I'd seen it and went back and listened. And then the guy walks off because she didn't come immediately out. And so she comes out and thinks it was Louie, asks if he has an anger problem. She's really upset at this point. He denies that it was him, and she didn't believe him, and she holds the door open and tells him to have at it.
Right. Well, yes. Louie, so Louie's standing at the door, and he tries to warn the guy off, like, there's somebody in there, to, like, to protect her. And the guy, this LaFoon guy, just, like, pounds on the door. And he does sound exactly like Louie, and he's like, come on, hurry up, I gotta go, and I gotta take a dump or whatever.
Oh, it was crude, right, it was horrible and crude.
Yeah, so, and then, he, of course, he leaves. Has that ever happened to you, where you were like, either, because this sometimes happens in cars, you ever been in your car where somebody, like, is in the front seat and they hit the horn because somebody's not moving fast enough while you're driving? And you're kind of like, you're the recipient of their wrath, even though they're not the ones, like, in the position to get the response from the other person.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So that kind of happens to Louie. Like, he's stuck. The guy leaves, and it looks like he was the one pounding on the door, like, come on, I gotta take a dump. Hurry up. So she comes out and, like, okay, here you go. Take your dump. Have a great time.
But isn't it even kind of worse than that? Because, I mean, at this point, she doesn't even believe him.
Oh, of course. That's the funny part. It's like, plus it was funnier because it was another door problem. Like the door with the woman and the, you know, you're looking at me and while I'm naked.
Yeah, I mean, he's just having this, the you know, she won't even let him in her apartment, let him sit maybe on her couch while she continues to get dressed, and then the door with the lady who's going to flash him, and then the door downstairs with him, you know, they couldn't work that puzzle out, and then the door, right, you know, at the bathroom.
So he's kind of caught in these uncomfortable situations that are not created by him. Like, he's really doing the right thing, right? He's trying to knock on the door to meet his date. He's trying to, like, be polite and watch the bathroom door while his date's in there. And then all these other, you know, third party things happen and, like, make it uncomfortable for him.
But why wouldn't she believe him at that point?
Why wouldn't she believe what?
That it wasn't him. Well, I mean, he hasn't proved himself to be a liar or anything like that.
It's just funny. It's just like that scenario left it open to her interpret, there's nobody here but you. Where is, like, she even said, right, where is he?
Okay, but see, she's not hungry anymore, because, see, we talked about that earlier, that was, like, the reason that she was maybe so snappy, and but she's not hungry now.
Right.
So what is
but
it now?
All of these events are conspiring to prove Louie to be kind of a loser, like, overdressed on a first casual date, trying to impress her, you know, pounding on the door too much on the first meeting because he was nervous that the naked lady was there and he wanted to get away from her. Then he's pounding on the door again because she's in the bath. I mean, Chelsea doesn't know all this. She just, you know, she's not very nice about it, but if you took all the facts that she had, it looks like this guy is just like an overbearing pound on the door, I want to kiss you too often, I want to be too polite and open every door for you. Like, Louie does look bad because of these unforeseen circumstances that, you know, that he doesn't control.
Right. It's like the whole thing has been set up to just be a terrible situation.
So you can't blame her. You can't really blame her. She's not really very understanding, but you can't really blame her because it looks like he's, you know, it really does look like he's, like, overbearing.
Okay, I can blame her, and I'll tell you why. Because if you're out with somebody and you're gonna spend your time with them, and he's obviously trying to be as nice as he can, let's just at least make it happy. you know, I don't have to go out with you again. I never have to see you again, but I want to enjoy it, right? And she doesn't, at this point, she doesn't want to enjoy it. She's not entertaining anything. Why she's still there, I don't know.
Well, she should at least be happy that she doesn't have an infected vagina.
I am not going to have that conversation about that. But
okay, so what happens now?
Okay. Then the next scene, it's another scene. They're sitting on the park bench. There's the, you know, river, I guess, flowing behind them. It doesn't really say exactly where they are, but they're sitting there. It's silent. She's kind of got this body language where she's leaned all, you know, way far away. And he's sitting there and he's kind of facing toward her. And he gives her that awkward smile again when she looked at him. And that just ticks her off. So he immediately, finally, gets defensive. And he starts defending why he's such a bad date. And that he's a real man and he's raising children. And he starts very much being confrontational to her about what's her contribution to the world other than that she's young and cute and has a flat stomach. And he starts saying she should be nervous and trying to impress him. And she's just like, I mean, this whole thing has went from him being sweet and smiling to him immediately being, you should impress me. What's going on here? Why is this happening like this?
Right. Why am I trying to impress you so much? Why aren't you trying to impress me? Why aren't you nervous to impress me?
Right. And she's incredulous and she's looking at him and he somehow takes that as an invitation for a kiss. So he goes in for another kiss and is completely rebuffed, and not only rebuffed, but she runs away and there happens to be a helicopter there that she jumps in and they fly away.
Yeah, she zooms away. So that's where I tweeted Chelsea Peretti and said, I have this irrational fear of the same thing happening to me on bad dates.
And what did she say?
She just like tweeted back an LOL or something.
That's pretty good. But that was funny, right? I mean, that was really good. I mean, who could imagine she hops on a helicopter?
That was funny. Yeah, that's like the total escape.
I mean, she like jumps up and runs too. And he's sitting there in mid-kiss, like with his eye, well, not kiss, but attempt kiss, with his eyes closed and leaning toward her. And she's just done.
Right. So what do you think the answer to that is? Like, why am I trying to impress you so hard? And why aren't you trying to impress me a little bit back?
I think if he had had that attitude going into it, it would have been a completely different night, personally.
But that's a boy-girl question that stands over all relationships. Like, why do guys have to impress women so much? And why aren't women trying to impress guys back? And I'll pose that question because Louis obviously wrote this and Louis's in charge of the show and all that. And that's probably what's in his head. But as a guy, that's what I would think, too, is like, why do guys always have to like make such a big, totally good impression on women and not the other way around?
Why do you think that? Why do you think it's that way?
Well, I just asked you that.
I don't think that's the way it is, as you know, typically. I'm not sure. I mean, I'm the mother of three daughters, and I see lots of stuff going into preparation to impress guys.
Well, yeah, but I think basically women wait for guys to come to them and impress them and win them over more than guys wait for women to come and win them over. Like, guys are the aggressors. Guys are the ones that have to, like, find and meet and impress women more than the other way around.
Okay, first of all, I said I have three daughters and you didn't go, aw. No, but that's true that guys are the aggressor, but it's usually, don't you think, because girls put out the signals to the guys. I don't know that guys are that aggressive typically to the girls who don't let them know that they're interested.
That's nature, though. That's how nature works. Guys, you know, men pursue women. Males pursue females.
Well, right. But girls go to a lot of trouble, too, I guess is what I'm saying. It's not just him going to the trouble to impress. I think maybe the stuff that the girls do is more subtle. No?
No, I think you're missing the whole point. It's like guys have to pursue women and win over women to make a relationship happen. Anyway, they go back to the Comedy Cellar, and Louis telling more jokes.
Yeah, they go back. They're back at the stand-up comedy thing. He's talking. That's when he goes into the puppy. He talks about if you bring a puppy home to your kids, essentially what you're bringing home is tears in a few years, because we all know what eventually happens to dogs. And then he goes into a story about his dog and the dog that he had to put down because it had a tumor on its snout. And then he had a dream about putting the dog down. After he had went and had the dog put down, they gave the dog the shot and they put the dog to sleep. They put the dog down and he asked the veterinarian about what happens when, you know, what they do with the remains. And he says they do a mass grave. And so then he goes home and he has a bad dream. Well, in his dream, he talks about his dog waking up from this mass grave in the middle of all these dead dogs around him. And he goes walking past the dead cat pile or something like that. And he makes his way back home because the morphine that he gave his dog has somehow worn off. This is a dream he had that night. And so he makes his way. It's thundering, it's lightning, it's horrible. And he makes his way back home and he scratches on the door. And Louis opens the door and there stands his dog. And everybody's so happy. Oh, the dog's back. And then it realizes immediately, we got to do this again.
Yeah, we have to go through this all over again.
Yeah, he's still got the tumor on his nose. And, you know, and the dog's like, well, can I at least spend the night or something? The dog's like exasperated at him. So.
Right.
That yeah, was and funny. Then he does say, and that's why he has trouble with dates.
So that's why it's hard to start dating.
Yeah. It's because kind of like everything ends in bad things. Yeah,
it's kind of like the Stephen King Pet Cemetery. Like, if we could park our dog in this pet cemetery, it will come back to life. But then it comes back to life. It's like this kind of gruesome, not quite the same as it was when he was really alive.
Yeah, that was pretty horrible. That whole thing. That was his cat, wasn't it? In Pet Cemetery, and then his child.
Right. Yeah. Right. Yeah, they did it with a human.
So then the credits start rolling and it shows him walking home. He's walking with his two daughters and they're like, where are we going, Daddy? And he said, I'm taking you back to your mom. And they're like, yay. And then the one daughter says her shoes are too tight. And he says, but we just bought you shoes. And it's kind of like another one of those little French toast moments to kind of round it all out about just little moments of life and how their little slice of life and maybe even a little slice of aggravation in life. I just bought you the shoes and now they're too small and I made you the French toast and you don't like French toast.
Right. It's funny how you make your notes on the episode and how I make my notes, because I saw that scene as like the little girl says, the littlest of the two daughters says, carry me, you know, carry me, I'm tired or whatever, or my shoes are hurting or whatever. And Louis says, if I carry you, you won't get strong. And yeah. She just looks at him like, what? So what? I just want to be picked up and carried. And so he ends up picking her up and carrying her. Like that whole getting strong is like a totally male superimposed thought that doesn't register at all with her. And then Louis probably realizes, like, this is really stupid for me to, like, try to make my daughter strong by forcing her to walk. And so he picks her up anyway.
Well, yeah, she's like, what, 4? I mean, she's this little bitty kid.
Yeah. But there's a hint of logic in it. Like, you can't just succumb to every adversity, you know? Like, you can't just, because you don't like waffles, you can't get something else automatically.
She's 4.
I know, but there's a hint of like, there's a hint of sage advice in there. Like, things won't always go perfectly your way. I think it's a valid piece of advice from obviously a male parent who's like not totally in tune with his little daughters, but it's valid nonetheless.
I think it's very, very stereotypical father parenting versus mother parenting. Very stereotypical. And everything I see him doing is like that.
And equally valuable.
Absolutely. Absolutely equally valuable. I couldn't agree more. I think that's what turns out, or certainly contributes to turning out the well-rounded human, is the softness of the mother and the life knocks lessons maybe of the father. I agree.
Right. Even the father of daughters, which is a weird kind of twist too. It's like, you can tell he's confused. Like, you know, do I give them just everything they want, or is it better to teach them that they can't have everything? And then he's on a date with a woman that he's trying to impress. He's just trying to be sweet and kind, and he's like overly sweet and kind, and it backfires. So it's kind of a weird, I know they jammed a lot of information into the pilot, but it's a very informative map of Louis's mind, I think.
Which says a lot, and it's hopefully a good indicator of what the future episodes are going to be.
Yeah, so would you watch more episodes of Louis? Would you say that you liked it?
I really did. I really did like it. And I specifically liked dissecting it. I specifically liked looking at the individual pieces of it, because I thought it had a lot of, just like you said, I think it had a lot of life lessons in it.
Yeah, he gains more. I mean, it even gets more edgy as he, because he's, you know, that was his pilot, and he was trying to win over whoever was making decisions about posting it on the network. So, you know, it's into like the third or fourth season now. So, I mean, he gets pretty bold with his future episodes.
Even, well, okay.
Even worse. Yep, even worse.
Okay. I believe you.
All right, so that's it. That's Louis episode one, season one, episode one. Louis Pilo.
Pretty good, Pilo. That's pretty good.
All right, I'll let you off the hook. I'm pounding you pretty hard here.
Yeah, a little bit. Just a little bit.
Okay, go to bed, sleepy.
Okay, well, but what did you think, really?
Well, other than all that, it was great.
Thank you.